Welcome to Chevron's Locked, a Stargate podcast. I'm Chelsea.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Moni.
This episode, we are talking about The Torment of Tantalus. This episode was written by Robert C. Cooper. It's his second episode of many episodes that he wrote for the series. It was directed by Jonathan Glassner, who's one of the show creators, but this was the first of only two episodes, I think, that he directed. It aired the 3rd of October, 1997. Which we know for sure. Because of our other failed attempts to record this. It has Paul McGillion in it as a young Ernest Littlefield, who notably goes on to be Dr. Carson Beckett on Stargate Atlantis. And it's also one of the other... What?
Oh, just sure. Yeah, I've never seen it.
I've actually never seen him on Stargate Atlantis, but I do recognize him because I've seen things from it.
I mean, I know who he is, so...
Yeah.
He's actually one of the few characters I liked.
It also has Elizabeth Hoffman as Catherine Langford. And so we had some dispute about how many episodes she appeared in when we were talking about Catherine Langford. It only shows her in this episode and in the alternate reality one. Yeah.
What is that episode called?
I got it.
There but for the love of God or something like that.
But
for the grace of God. So she's only in those two episodes. She's referenced in other episodes.
Right.
And we see flashbacks of her in some of the clip episodes. But I was like, I swear I know this lady. And even though the first time I watched this series, I love Catherine, I was like feeling annoyed by her and I couldn't figure out why. And then I realized it's because it's the same actress who plays the grandma in Dante's Peak. Have you guys seen Dante's Peak?
Yes.
And she's the worst in that movie.
Oh, she fucking dies.
Yeah, because she was a freaking moron who refused to leave her cabin when it was going to explode in a volcano.
You heartless mother. Hang on, just a quick question. That has Pierce Brosnan in it, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I don't think I've ever seen it, but I know it exists.
Pierce Brosnan and Linda Hamilton.
Yes.
And the whole family almost dies because this stupid grandma's like refusing to leave her cabin, and they decide to go get her, and then she ends up sacrificing herself to save everyone else. Which, okay, a little bit of redemption. It's a terrible movie, by the way. It's such a bad.
I love Dante's Peak. Well, I mean, I question your movie choices. So.
I have no idea what you're talking about. We watched Dante's Peak in high school for like 7 different science classes. Like at the end of the year, like fuck all education, just watch Pierce Brosnan. Yes, learn about seismology and volcanoes and shit.
But
yeah,
the science in that movie is so bad.
Oh, it's great.
The science again,
Chelsea,
bad.
you can't take Jess's film recommendation.
I have great taste in films, excuse you. Twister?
Those Twilight films?
What's your point? We're great. Very entertaining.
I do not like Dante's Peak. But I had to watch it in school, too. In middle school, we watched it. And a science class, and I remember even as a middle schooler being like, this is bad science in this movie.
I'm gonna have to watch this now just to see.
It's so good.
Whose side I fall on. I'm pretty sure I've seen the poster, and I've seen like a couple, like a little bit of it, because Pierce Brosnan's hot. But,
yeah. It's like a good, it's like bad disaster movie, but very enjoyable.
So it's like The Rock.
Yes. It's like The Rock, and it's like Twister. Well, no, Twister is a good movie, but it's like disaster movies that are just fun.
Okay, so it's like The Rock. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
With a little bit of like a love story, too.
There's no love story. Oh, there is a love story in The Rock, but okay.
Moving on. Yes.
Yeah, sorry.
Langford, Elizabeth Hoffman. Got it.
Sorry. That one's 100% on me.
No, tangents are good.
All right. Moving on. Before we jump in, our usual spoiler warnings are in effect, as well as a warning for explicit content. Mel, you want to give us a synopsis?
Okay, yes. Came from Stargate Wiki. Daniel sees a video documenting classified experiments from 1945 in which the Stargate was actually activated, and Ernest Littlefield, Catherine Langford's love, was stranded alone on a planet for more than 50 years. SG-1 and Langford gate to the planet and are surprised to find Littlefield alive. But their reunion for Littlefield and Catherine is bittersweet, and things are further complicated when the DHD, the Dial Home Device, is destroyed in a storm, forcing the team to resort to drastic measures in order to return to Earth.
All right, thorough.
They're way better than IMDb's, so.
They are.
Considering that this episode actually doesn't have much of a plot so much, like, it's a very lengthy synopsis for something that doesn't actually have a lot happening in it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, you're right. There's just not much happens.
Mm-mm.
Although it kind of starts off interesting. It starts off with the old, we like 1945, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we
with
see
the sculptury. Did you pull the music by any chance, or that opening clip? It's like a sultry noir remix of the SG-1 theme song.
No,
to show you that it's really old school.
No, but I can after the fact.
It's legit.
So the first one I have since we started in 1945 is: could you imagine hand cranking the gate to
Teal'c
get it
can.
To lock?
Oof!
Because that looks like a nightmare.
Teal'c yeah, does it good. Like at least 3 times.
He does it in this episode.
Yeah, he does it in this episode.
And I like that they called it like chevrons and like locks. Like it's all the same terminology. Mm-hmm. So this is all. I get it, guys. It's the same Stargate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's also to help the audience realize what's happening
because
we're dumb and we're still using the same words, so we're not confused.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's really, it's a pretty compelling opening. It's interesting. Like immediately the first time I saw it, I was like, wait, what? They didn't, I was confused. I guess we didn't know exactly what the Stargate was doing between in the movie when we saw it in like 1920 when it was, or no, I guess it was like 1930 when they unearthed it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they finally got it working, especially at this point in the series, we don't really know what it's been doing. So it was interesting. I did love that. So then we see that it's Daniel watching film of the experiments they were doing in 1945. And he's enthralled by this, which I think is understandable. Like, this is pretty crazy that they were working on it.
You know, I think it's weird. Like, the opening scene, I was like, why do we care? Who cares that they got it working in 1945? Like, we got it working now. We're using it now. Who cares what they did then? Like,
because then it brings the question of if they got it working then, why weren't they using it, you know, before Daniel had to figure out how to make it work again?
Mm-hmm.
So like, we figured out how it worked. Like, they figured out how to turn it on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they sent somebody through.
Mm-hmm.
And then but then we didn't know that they couldn't turn it back on.
Uh-huh.
So the question is, why weren't they still using it?
Because they didn't have the power source. Next question.
But Daniel cares. Also, Daniel's an archaeologist. Of course he cares. Yeah, it's just history.
Daniel cares. Well, even Jack cares.
Yeah.
Well, yes, Jack does care. But I feel like what it was is like, because Daniel got brought on because they needed help deciphering the glyphs and stuff so they could actually dial out an address. And then, because they said on this one that they just because Sam was like, they didn't have a way to compensate for stellar drift and like, it was basically total luck. So
there are some timeline problems created by the existence of this episode, period, and plot problems because Daniel presumably coming in basically gave them the idea to dial a seventh symbol and they needed a seventh right. symbol. So I don't know if they would have even known in 1945 to do seven symbols
right.
and they just happened to lock into one of the billions of combinations that happened to be close enough to not be affected by stellar drift. So
yeah, which is interesting because I think that Sam in the pilot says that Abydos is the closest planet to ours to compensate for stellar drift. So the fact that they could, like y'all said, pick that one address out of, you know, billions of computations.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's cool, whatever. Again, don't let the facts get in the way of the story, guys.
I guess, like, I recognize that it's cool, but, like, just Daniel acts like, whoa, the Pentagon, like, they sent everything over, and, like, no one's looked at it in 60 years, and, like, or 50 years, this is the 90s, 50 years, and, like, what are we, like, whoa, it's just, like, all right, like, relax, buddy, it's...
But, like, what were they doing? Had they been to other planets? Had they brought things back? Is there more information they could have in their quest to find the...
But then I have a question.
They would have known.
Sam worked in the Pentagon on the Stargate. Therefore, wouldn't she know all that information already?
No, yeah. Because there's a lot of compartmentalization of information. Also, I think I have the clip. I'll play it, see.
Classified, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, please tell me you have the jack line. Please tell me you have the jack line.
Pretty sure I do.
A whole boxes of material could be missing.
No, the Pentagon said this was everything.
No, please. The Pentagon's lost entire countries.
So great.
Also, Jack is there. This made me laugh to collect Daniel for 2 days of tests. Physical examination tests. And I really liked this little kind of throwaway line in here because they are doing tests on them, which is important to me that
it is
that they're being monitored and the effects of the Stargate travel are possibly being considered and watched. So go Janet.
I mean, Jack also seemed really enthused about the physical. Like, he was like, come on, let's go. Come on, it's time to go move. Let's go. Go on. We're going now to run and do things.
Yeah. But yeah, so then Jack also does seem sidetracked when they see that the gate had actually been opened, which again is a pretty big revelation. And then the titles happen and we go to Catherine's house where Daniel is. Yeah, so Daniel is visiting Catherine Langford, and Jack had apparently told her that Daniel stayed on Abydos.
Yes.
And so she's excited to see him. She didn't think he was dead. She was just surprised to see him back on Earth.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Daniel's response to that is, well, you know, everything is classified.
But yet I'm about to tell you a whole bunch of classified.
And yet, here we are.
I mean, I think he's mostly just making excuses for himself. Let's be real. He's just been distracted. He only really knew Catherine for like 4 days before he
right.
went through.
No, we don't know how much time passed.
Please, Melanie, you go. We're on the same page here.
I was talking about the fact that he tells her about the Stargate and everything that they've done and that it's still working and that they're doing things with it. He wasn't supposed to tell anyone that. Like,
he literally says, when Catherine is like, talks to him in my notes, Catherine's like, why didn't you tell me you were back? And Daniel goes, well, you know, everything is classified.
Mm-hmm. But then yet, I'm about to tell you all.
But yeah, here we are.
You're a very secret, so I'm not supposed to tell you.
Yeah, except that he's also there to get information from her.
Oh, right. But that doesn't excuse the fact that he's still not allowed to tell her any of those things.
Yeah, Jack wasn't allowed to tell her that Daniel stayed on Abydos either.
Who said that?
How do you know that?
That wasn't stated.
What?
That wasn't stated.
He wasn't supposed to tell anybody. That was his secret. His and Daniel's secret.
Well, right. But then he told
He probably him. Also wasn't allowed to tell her that Daniel died on Abydos. Like, I mean... all of that stuff was supposedly classified.
But
Daniel told Catherine about the entire Stargate program and that, like, it was still up and running and that they were still traveling and that they were going out into other planets.
She already knew about the Stargate program.
No, she built it.
She sent them to Abydos.
She only knew about the Abydos. She thought the Stargate program was shut down after that. That's why it was such a surprise to her.
That's why she was mad.
Yes, like, why didn't you tell me? Catherine goes off on Daniel, and she, like, goes, don't you think I'd be interested?
Yeah, I'm just saying, I don't blame Daniel for telling her. I think he was right. She deserved to know.
I don't blame Daniel for telling her. I'm just saying, objectively, broke the rules.
Right.
But Jack breaks the rules.
We're not talking about Jack right now. We're talking about Daniel.
Look, I'm jumping on the Chelsea train for a second.
And I'm only bringing it up because Hammond reads him the riot act, and then Jack is like, you had to just take it one step further. That's later in the episode, but that's the only reason I'm bringing it up.
Yeah, well, I have a clip for that, but that's actually way later. Yeah, so Catherine is mad at Daniel because he didn't tell her, and then he, basically to take her off the track of her being mad at him, was like, oh, what happened? And you didn't tell me that they were doing experiments on the Stargate in 1945. And so she starts telling him, and we get little flashbacks to 1945, and we get old-timey music, and a young Catherine Langford, and a young Ernest Littlefield, and yeah, basically she says the only thing she knew about the Stargate were what she overheard between her father and Ernest Littlefield. because her father was in charge of the experiments. And I love that she said that FDR was the curious sort, that's why they were experimenting on it. Which begs the question, did it get shut down because Truman wasn't the curious sort?
Well, all that matters now is that Jeb Bartlett is in charge and the Stargate program is back up.
I was going to say, maybe Truman's curiosity for science was killed by dropping the A-bombs in Japan.
You're probably not wrong on that, actually. I think we're just like...
PSA to watch Chernobyl on HBO. It's really good.
I forgot that Daniel took, like, classified documents and tapes from the mountain, too. That kind of irked me a little bit. Like, him telling her is fine. But, I mean, we took the tapes from the mountain. We took, like, folders from the mountain, from the, like, that came from the Pentagon that aren't supposed to be seen by people, like...
He said they were... The Pentagon declassified them. That's why he was watching them, is because the Pentagon declassified them.
But you're still not supposed to show civilians.
It was... I mean, it was her fiancé.
So, that doesn't excuse... You can't... No.
What does declassified mean, though? Like, why... they're 50-year-old things. A lot of times the military has automatic default classification where it's not like they just release it to civilians in general, but if you went digging for it, you'd be allowed access to it because...
There's also levels of classification, so maybe it was just, like, declassified in the sense that it's not, like, top secret. It's, like, semi-classified or, like, declassified, meaning available to certain ranking members. We don't really know. The long story of it is that Daniel broke the rules. Whether or not Catherine had the right to know or not, he still broke the rules. Moving on.
So Daniel is asking her about it, and she's like, how do you know? And he says he saw the tapes. And we get this line.
Military had very little use for a 21-year-old girl at that time. Neither did my father.
Woof.
Yeah, I don't like Catherine's dad.
No. Like, no.
But and typical man of the 40s. Like
I mean, yeah, maybe. I still don't like him.
we don't have to like him, for sure. But he definitely was also still the guy, pretty much every 1940s dude.
He also doesn't last long, you know? He's there and he's gone. So yeah. Like,
well, no, it's just sad to have, like, your own daughter be that brilliant and just not care.
Well, it's like this, well, not just like not caring, but like you were resigned to housewifery and pretty much it, 1940s. So like when she's sitting there telling Ernest like what kind of current are you using and maybe you should try this kind of current, that's about as close as she was ever going to get at that time.
Yeah.
Wow, what if Sam was born in that time period? Sorry. Okay.
Horrible. It's just she would be just like Catherine.
I know. It'd be very sad.
I mean, there were women in science. They just generally weren't allowed to hold degrees or positions. They were kind of dependent on their spouses. So you would have, like, brilliant women who followed their PhD husbands around and did brilliant things. I mean, and then their names get erased from history because they weren't officially working on those things.
Well, look at, like, freaking Rosalind Franklin. I mean, you don't know who she is, and yet we know who Watson and Crick is, so.
Yeah, although Watson and Crick were also just kind of dickheads and probably would have erased anyone, men or women. I mean, they did also erase other male grad students from their discoveries.
Yeah.
But no, you're right. I mean, Rosalind Franklin got pretty effectively erased from history. Oh, I mean, and also that is par for the course in academic nonsense across the board, is people taking credit for a lot of hard work that their poor grad students have to do. Anyway, yeah, so we get in the flashback, we get some sense of how brilliant Catherine is and how wasted her mind is being because misogyny is dumb. And I also didn't, I mean, again, it was 1940s and I think Ernest is at least better than her dad was, but the way that he kind of scoffed at her, like, idea was, I've, like, been the recipient of that scoff and it makes me so mad.
Yeah.
Then we jump back to the present and I had the thought of, like, Catherine keeps kind of mentioning in the flashbacks, like, oh, when are you going to talk to my father, and like giving Ernest pointed looks, and it's like, what is this dude's... I had really mixed feelings about Ernest just based on the flashbacks because it seemed like he was sort of pussyfooting around in terms of actually making it official and telling her father and courting her officially and deciding to marry her, because she kept being like, oh, are you going to talk to my dad? And he's like, yeah, sure. And then not talking to her dad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I kind of get it. Like, it sucks, but like, also, like, you're dating the boss's daughter. You'd like to keep working on the project. You don't know how it's going to go over.
Yeah, I guess so.
But no, he should also probably have stepped up.
Oh, also, I mean, if they had declassified these files sooner, they could have saved themselves a lot of trouble, because Ernest figured out that the symbols were destinations, not just random combinations. Like, he says that they that the symbols must denote destinations in space. And
but doesn't Kathleen's dad, like, brush him off?
I don't know, but the fact that he had suggested it, and he was one of the lead scientists on the team, like, if that was in the notes somewhere, then, or if he had mentioned it to Catherine, which, you know, you'd think maybe he would have. She was close by during that conversation, but they maybe could have saved. I mean, they still needed Daniel to figure out the last symbol, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how, like, formal of, like, a, I think, like, that whole scene to me felt like a very, like, informal, like, almost not like a breakfast meeting, but just like, I've been up all night, and what if it's this? It's like, oh, calm down, you crazy scientist man. Drink your coffee and let's get back to hard science.
Yeah.
But you're right, if they had written it down or something, but then also, like, it was over in the Pentagon, buried somewhere, like, who knows?
No, I don't think that they necessarily should have had that information, but it just made me laugh, like, oh, they kind of sort of had glanced around figuring it out in 1945. It's too bad nobody bothered to pass that information on to the next people working on the project.
Yeah.
I mean, Ernest was on another planet, so maybe he didn't get a chance to write that down or tell anyone that that was his theory. Yeah, so that scene just keeps going back and forth, getting some of Catherine's backstory and what happened. Although she does mention that she was 21 years old in 1945. But in the movie, she was like 10 or 11 in 1928. So she probably would have been older than that.
Yeah, I was about to say, she really looked really young in the movie.
But ladies always lie about their age.
Yeah, she was lying about her age.
You know us ladies. I was thinking this whole, and the only reason I'm bringing it up because I obviously had the thought at this particular scene. I like that this episode is trying to, like, bridge, I think, movie and show together, but it feels a little out of place. This is the 11th episode, and it just seems like, okay, kind of late in the game to be throwing this episode out, I guess. I almost wanted to put this earlier in this season. Like, it just seemed to make more sense there. I mean, I'm not mad at it being here, other than it just feels a little out of place.
Does the companion say anything about it?
No, it doesn't. And I looked for it, and weirdly, the companion basically calls this episode, like, a hot fucking mess.
Oh, interesting. Really?
Basically, just because he said, it was a really big episode. But basically, the director of this episode, which is also weird, because the credits list director as Jonathan Glasner, mm-hmm. but then the text part of it, whatever, says that it was Mario Azzopardi who was directing. And he said that the Mario Azzopardi simply forgot what he was supposed to be filming. He looked at the call sheet and realized we had everybody there to shoot, but of course he hadn't had time to prepare. So he basically just stepped in and just, like, winged it.
What? That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's also weird because it says it's directed by Jonathan Glasner.
Yeah. So, and this is, that information came from producer John Smith. So the whole text of the episode and the companion just basically says, like, the director forgot what they were doing, and the whole episode is just basically like, do it.
Wow. Maybe that's why they're all in, like, one set.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so then Daniel shows Catherine the tape, and she realizes that the guy who went through the Stargate was Ernest, who her father had told her died in a lab explosion.
Also, when we say tape, we mean tape. Full-on VHS tape.
Yes.
Some people don't know what a VHS tape is, Jess.
That's why I'm clarifying, when we say tape, we mean tape.
I imagine most of our listeners know what a VHS tape is.
It's a 25-year-old show. If you don't, go fucking Google it. I'm upset at you.
You had to have VCR, guys. I'm just saying.
They don't know what a VCR is now.
Yes, they do. I have faith in our listeners.
I don't.
For the younger generation, if you have any of those. They're old ancient machines that you can no longer buy.
Yeah, so poor Catherine, that's kind of a big shock for her to be getting. She seemed more upset about her... Well, there were a lot of things that seemed to be happening for her emotionally here. First, that her dad lied to her. And second, that Ernest made that decision to go through the Sargate without ever consulting her, which is a pretty big decision to make and presumably, like, quite possibly life-threatening. Like, we get the sense that Ernest thought he would be able to come back, I'm sure, but that's a... They had no idea what was on the other side.
Mm-mm. And she's dealing with the fact that Daniel's back in her living room and the Stargate program is still happening.
Yeah, and she's being left out of it, which sucks.
Yeah, and she wasn't brought in.
Yep, so lots of emotions from Catherine here, all very justified.
I also love that, like, on the tape, when Ernest is, like, putting on the helmet, it's, like, one of those, like, old school, like, diver helmets almost, like, you know, mm-hmm. that you see. And I was like, I wonder if they put, like, a diving helmet on him because the puddle looks like water and they just assumed there was, like, water, so they went with this kind of, like, diving apparatus kind of thing.
I assumed it was because it's the closest thing they had to, like, an airtight suit, and they have no idea what atmosphere he would be walking into. Like, what, they have no idea what's on the other side, whether it's water, whether it has breathable air. Like, they really had no idea, because it's not like they had a MALP to send through or any kind of probe that could really send back readings.
But then my question becomes, so, I mean, I don't know much about diving apparatuses in the 1940s, but do they have, like, any sort of oxygen or anything? Or was it attached to, like, his head? Because I remember Scooby-Doo cartoons where it was, like, attached to your head and it would, like, come out of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
You'd come down into the ocean. So, like, then I'm curious as to why they thought that if you go through this murky puddle in this ring and you go through it, what makes you think that the oxygen thing on top of his head is going to stay there?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. So according to Wikipedia, the diving helmet was a rigid head enclosure with a breathing gas supply used in underwater diving. So there was a gas supply inside of it.
Okay.
Or an oxygen supply, I should say.
Well, it depends on what era.
It wasn't regulated. It was just all at once in your helmet.
Well, in the really old school ones, what they would do is you had the thing go up and the people would just use a pump basically to pump air from the surface down into the helmet originally.
So that must be what I'm thinking of with the Scooby-Doo cartoon when they had little hose coming out of his head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they did have a hose going through to him. And there's a little bit of a problem here because what we've seen is if you have something going through the Stargate, the Stargate won't disengage.
Mm-hmm.
But they basically send him through and the thing is still feeding behind him, and then the Stargate immediately disengages and cuts off the tube.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's true. I don't know if it was immediate.
It was pretty, I mean, because we saw the Stargate open, we saw him go through, and we saw it cut off, and it was definitely not the, like, what is it, like 38, 37, however many minutes it is before it shuts off automatically usually. Maybe it was the power supply. My guess is that there wasn't enough power supply, so it just shut off.
So the Stargate Wiki also pointed out this error, and they say that according to Stargate canon, the active gate also has the capability to determine exactly what is going into the event horizon. It's also designed to compensate for similar situations, i.e. it being open or whatever. This could also have been caused by insufficient power supply or technical problems due to limited technology available in 1945. It should also be noted that the issue regarding Stargates deleting objects that are incomplete was not raised until nearly 10 years after the episode aired, making this a retcon rather than a goof.
Hmm.
That's per the SG-1 wiki.
I mean, I wouldn't call it a goof. It was just more of us just trying to figure out how that happened, which I do agree. I like the idea that because of the time period, they didn't have enough energy going to the gates.
That's kind of how I read it, too. Like, because they were already struggling to, like, get it going in the first place, so I can totally see it just cutting out.
Yeah, no, I think that's a perfectly reasonable explanation. Not enough power. Catherine tells Daniel after all these revelations that he reminds her of Ernest, which is an interesting...
She has a crush on Daniel. Okay?
Yeah, and he seems a little uncomfortable. That's
exactly how I read that whole thing.
And he seems...
There's a stick out there for it.
Oh, is there?
No, I have no idea.
Oh, I was like, what? Daniel seemed a little uncomfortable with that revelation, honestly. I mean, it's kind of a weird thing to say, but
it's kind of like a backhanded compliment, right? I mean, we just saw Ernest basically like be so wrapped up in his own work and like his own like ideas. He doesn't consult Catherine. He's got his own issues with like personal relationships in favor of pursuing his work.
Yeah.
Which is both admirable, obviously, because Catherine likes that in a man, for better or worse. And so Catherine obviously likes that in a man, but also it's not always necessarily great. So I could definitely see Daniel being like, what are you trying to say?
It's fairly accurate though, because he basically did the same thing when he was like peaced out to Abydos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then the next scene is Hammond chewing Daniel out quite aggressively.
Well deserved chew out.
It's definitely deserved. I don't blame Hammond for this. I do want to discuss. So Daniel's getting chewed out. Catherine is right there. It seems like he maybe could have taken Daniel somewhere private to chew him out instead of right in front of her.
Mm-hmm.
Way better to berate him in the open. Way better.
Maybe that's just Hammond's CEO style.
Yeah, maybe.
Also, real quick, yes, there is fake for it. Moving on.
Did you look? Daniel Catherine fake? Is it like Daniel Catherine as she's an old lady, or is it Daniel Catherine like Catherine Origins, some time travel shit?
I didn't look that hard.
The internet does not disappoint.
Don't worry, I'm on it.
Okay. It's like it's on LiveJournal, so. And again, for our younger listeners, that was before Tumblr or fanfic.net.
Or AO3.
Or AO3.
I'm about to be scarred emotionally, I think.
That's why I didn't look into it. I just found it for you. Okay. Oh. Do you have a clip for us?
I do have a clip.
Sir, if you will just let me explain.
This is a serious breach of protocol. These rules exist for a reason, Doctor. You think you're above them?
No,
Catherine!
And then Jack interrupts, and we get this I cut it a little bit, but...
I trust the General is making you feel right at home.
So far, he actually sounds worse than General West.
He's a teddy bear.
Also, Jack looks real hot in turtleneck.
Okay. He looks so hot this episode. I have Jack look so good like 10 different times.
You texted us that too. There were a couple moments I thought that, but his hair was really weird this episode.
It was kind of all over the place. I'll give you that.
I mean, it frequently is.
Why are you saying it's a bad thing? It's all like ruffled and like messy.
No, it's always ruffled and messy. I love that about Jack. There was something weird about it in this episode. I can't put my finger on it. So Jack, first of all, interrupts Hammond pretty purposefully in the middle of yelling at Daniel. And then he kind of is like, yeah, you weren't supposed to tell it. But we get this other moment I'm just going to play it and I want to ask you guys what you think.
Colonel, did you authorize Dr. Jackson to reveal classified information to this civilian?
Absolutely not, sir. In fact, I advised him not to say anything to her, despite the fact that she used to run the entire program and is responsible for most of our current knowledge about the gate.
I'm aware of who she is, Colonel.
Okay, so the way that Jack says that makes me think that the conversation that happened with Daniel, so after we cut out of that briefing room scene, was Daniel being like, oh, we have to go talk to Catherine about this. And Jack being like, yeah, but we're not supposed to. And Daniel being like, but she should know and she might have more information. And Jack's like, but we're not allowed to, like, wink, wink. I definitely can't go show her classified information. I really hope that you don't go show her. Like, the way that he says that whole conversation made me wonder what happened in the Warriors game.
Oh, no, I fell down the live journal. There's a lot of weird shit out there, guys.
She read the fanfic, which guys, is hard not to.
There's, like, Sam Hammond, there's Jack Hammond, there's Jack Kinsey.
Jack
there's
who?
There's Daniel Catherine. I can't unsee the things that my eyeballs just saw.
Rule 34, dude. Rule 34.
I did take it that way, Chelsea. More of like, you know, hey, Daniel, that's a great idea. Why don't you go over to Catherine's house? But kind of not really coming out and saying it like that.
Yeah, to me it had the feeling of, like, later in the series when he's like, well, I'm a military, you know, Sam and I are military, we can't help the Tolan escape. It would be a shame if a civilian did it. That kind of thing is sort of the feeling I got from this conversation of him being like, of course I didn't tell him to reveal classified information, even though he should have. Like, that's
kind of like Jack gave his, like, permission, not permission, but permission to go do it. But then, I don't know if he pulled the clip or not, but then, like, Daniel takes it one step further, and that's when Jack kind of, like, draws the line, like, I gave you, like, a lot of leeway, and you just had to take it one step further.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's...
you're totally right.
It's also things like that, Jess, that you just brought up, where I can kind of see this, the how people can ship Jack and Daniel. Okay.
I totally, to be fair, like, 100% to be fair, I see how people ship Jack and Daniel in season one.
Yeah, I see...
After one, it's a struggle for me.
I mean, there's little moments here and there throughout the season, but I agree that their relationship is definitely much more loving and fun in the first season, for sure.
Yeah. It's because Jack hasn't got tired of Daniel's shit yet.
Just give it time.
Yeah.
So then you get this, like, basically Daniel saying he found the address. He, like, zoomed in on the tape and managed to figure it out. And they want to go through. And Catherine says she wants to go with them.
Time out. Before we keep going further, can we acknowledge how everyone greeted Catherine like they were like BFFs?
Yes. Although, I mean, Sam hadn't come in yet, but yeah, she's about to walk in. Yes.
Can I also point out that it took 13%?
I wrote that down. I wrote it down. I said Sam walks in at 13:30, way too long to not see her in an episode.
Yeah, I wrote in all caps, hi, it's been 13 minutes and I'm just now seeing Sam. Okay, thanks.
Well, like, how hard would it have been to have it be Jack and Sam in that opening scene? Or for Teal, even for that matter, because Teal comes in later as well.
Well, Teal comes in, right after her. Like,
Yeah,
we don't see either of them.
But to be fair, we only see Jack for a short period of time as well. So it's a real heavy Daniel episode.
It is. Well, and we get all of the 1945 stuff. Like, most of the beginning of the episode wasn't really seeing any of SG-1. So, yeah, so Catherine wants to go with them. They all start pitching why they think they should go. Sam walks in. She's like, oh, I have another reason why we should go to this planet. Like, everyone's piling on to Hammond. And the reason that Sam gives is that the address that Daniel found is not on the cartouche. And so that would, and then Teal butts in and he's like, that would mean the Goa'uld haven't been there. And we get this gem of a moment that makes me love Catherine.
You speak?
When it is appropriate.
Great.
I love it.
I love that.
Yeah, so they're all like frantically throwing out the reasons like, we have to go to this planet. And then Hammond basically gives them a, you had me at hello moment. He's like,
I wrote down that, like, basically Hammond is the best CEO ever. Like, we have a team that's consistently breaking military protocol and going way off the rails. And he's like, you guys, whatever you want.
Well, I also like that he sort of tries to pretend to be a hard ass so that they all think they have to convince him. So Daniel's like, he's an American hero. We have to go look after him. And Sam's like, but we had this reason. And like, he sort of makes them do the work. Like, you guys have to come up with reasons to go places. I'm not just going to send you willy nilly. But then he's like, no, I'm just going to send you.
Right. So I'm just saying, if Hammond's like so chill about military protocol, I feel like.
Yeah.
Why are you laughing at him, huh? I'm just saying, I don't see any reason a certain CEO couldn't look a certain way elsewhere as two of our favorite members fell in love.
Yeah, honestly, I think Hammond would have looked the other way. He wasn't the problem. It could have caused problems outside of that.
I think he would have looked the other way had Kinsey not started being Kinsey.
Possible relationship ramifications is a discussion for later, but we can agree that Hammond does seem pretty capable of generally giving the, especially SG-1, but the SGC in general, a fair amount of leeway when it comes to military protocol and procedure.
Yeah.
Well, and this is especially evidenced by the fact that General Hammond elects to send a 73-year-old woman through the Stargate?
Yeah, I was thinking, so you know how you can't ride a roller coaster if you have heart problems? Mm-hmm. This feels very similar. I just feel like at a certain age, you shouldn't be allowed to go through the Stargate for fear of a heart molecule not going through correctly.
I'm going to just assume that Janet gave her a very thorough once-over before agreeing to send her through the Stargate. She must be a very healthy 73-year-old woman.
Oh, I was going to say, I really, really like that it's Daniel and Jack who, like, on either side of her, take her arm and, like, walk her through. It's like such a gentlemanly, like, oh, it's so sweet.
Okay, so, yes, Catherine goes to the Stargate.
With Daniel and Jack on either side, and it's adorable.
Yes.
And they get to the planet, and the MALP is there, and the building is all crumbly. They end up in this room, and it's kind of falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sort of looking around, and then Sam, you don't see what she sees. They're just looking around. Sam goes, oh my. And it pans around, and you see like the silhouette of Ernest. And so, like, it just made me giggle so much because you don't know what she's reacting to at first. And then as it's revealed, it just becomes funnier.
Got it. And she's reacting to Ernest. And being naked.
Also very cute. Yes, I like that.
Being naked. So we find Ernest Litterfield is horror. Yes,
but to and he's point, naked. I really like her little oh my. She almost says the oh my and oh boy more than she does Holy Hannah for like the first like season or so, and it's really cute.
Mm-hmm. I love her Sam. Oh boy too.
Just in case anyone needs to know that again.
Hey, I love that. Hey, Melanie, You're going to meet her on Shut Sunday. Up, I just need you to know that. Like in 11 days from now.
Yep. You were talking about what you're going to wear, and I was like, fuck, I don't even know what I'm going to
wear. Yeah, that's a thing to consider.
Anyway. I'll probably wear flannel like I always do.
So, they're in the castle crumbly thing. Ernest walks over to them, and he kind of walks over to Daniel and like pushes at his chest. And Daniel says, like, yeah, we're real. And then Ernest has this, like, his face just crumples. And he starts crying, basically, and hugs Daniel. Who, again, Ernest, very naked. Very naked. Daniel, very awkward. And Sam, I believe, gets the hell out of Dodge as Ernest makes the hug rounds of, oh my god, that... you're real. And Sam's like, nah, not here. I'm out of here. But I thought Ernest here, the actor who played the elder Ernest, did such a good job of like, this guy has been alone with nobody for 50 years. And then all of a sudden his little house is filled with 5 people and it's real.
Yeah. No, I thought they did a good job. And Sam noping the hell out of the naked hug situation was awesome.
Yes. Oh, yeah. For sure.
Ernest is hugging everyone, and then he sees Catherine, and she sort of reminds him who she is. And he realizes that it's her, and then he just turns and, like, speed walks away.
Mm-hmm. And a little...
Yeah, he did, the little noise he made was the weirdest part about it. Yep.
She looks so dejected.
It's so sad. Poor Catherine.
Their relationship, because, like, there's a exchange they have later, and I just want to be, like, it did not endear me to Catherine, and we'll get there, but there was, like, a scene, and I was like,
I don't ship it.
Oh, no. I'll wait until we get there, but.
All right, so then we get an establishing shot. That shows the building that they're in that is like halfway crumbling. It's like hanging over the edge of a cliff that's about to fall into the sea. It's very precarious.
Mm-hmm. Also, who thought that it would be a good idea to build like a castle kind of a thing over the ocean like that?
Lots of people do things like that.
A lot of people.
Like,
yeah.
Castles are kind of notorious for being on cliff sides or near cliff sides.
Mm-hmm. But no, but this is like over, like, I don't know, it's like over the ocean. It wasn't even like on a cliff side, over the ocean.
I get the feeling that the cliff side eroded away because it's been stormy and like the ocean is like right under it.
Yeah. this building has been there for presumably like thousands and millions of years.
Your point's well taken, though.
Well, I mean, yes. Generally, if you're wanting to build something that's going to be longstanding, I'm going to say yes, avoid cliffs near oceans.
That's prime real estate advice from us to you guys.
But it presumably has been there for a very long time, and it hasn't been in use for a long time. So, other than Ernest.
I wonder why it hasn't been in use. Like, why haven't they met there? Do they only meet, like, certain every like 100 years?
I don't think the ancients
well, the Furlings disappeared, so
the Furlings disappeared, the ancients all ascended and became a bunch of dickwads that don't do shit, and
the Asgard are Asgards.
They're dealing with their own problems.
The Nox are on their planet.
Yeah
It definitely feels like it hasn't been in use for a while. Maybe it was like an initial meeting site, but it hasn't been, they moved on to a bigger and better one.
Yeah, maybe they had a different place because they realized that one was going to crumble into the sea. Or they didn't like the stormy weather, right. I don't know.
Did we find out if the Furlings disappeared, or did we just never meet them?
You just never meet them.
Oh, okay. Well, you made it sound like we met them. Or like we didn't. I know we didn't meet them, but you made it sound like we got like a nugget thrown at us that they had disappeared or something. I wonder what the Furlings look like. Sorry. Okay.
Like little Ewoks.
Not like Ewoks.
Ew, no.
Not like what?
Ewoks are the worst.
Like little Chewies.
Like little Wookiees?
It's a whole race of Chewbaccas.
I could get, well, those are called Wookiees.
Yes, you know what I meant.
And they live on the planet Kashyyyk. No.
Nerd alert.
That's not how you say it. But it's like Kashyyyk or something like that. Anyway.
We just lost all of our nerd cred.
Why would we lose nerd cred for knowing Star Wars stuff? All right, so Daniel starts exploring to look for Ernest and asks him to put on some clothes, please.
Yes.
And then the thing that he puts on is clearly the, like, diving suit that he was wearing that he's cut up and torn apart to be basically, like, a tunic now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's revealed that Ernest has been alone this whole time, which, man, the mental fortitude that this guy has, that he's not just a total, like, he's weird, but that he's not a total basket case is impressive.
Well, I think the only reason that happened is because he made himself believe that Catherine was actually on the planet with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, genuinely, I do not know how he did not kill himself.
That's what hasn't it been proven that you can't be alone? Like,
yeah,
you literally cannot live alone without human contact. Or like human to human like interaction. Or just any interaction. Right? Without like completely losing it.
And the hallucination.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm
agreeing with you.
Okay, I know. I'm just saying, but you two are in like the medical area.
I have no idea.
I mean, I don't know if there's never been things about people this long, but yes, solitude is, I mean, yeah. And anyone who's ever been in prison and talks about solitary confinement, and that's for short periods of time, talk about how inhumane and cruel it is.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know how, and I guess like, so he's mad at Cat, never mind. So I don't, yeah, he, how he, did not kill himself. I don't know.
Yeah. He, and then there's a heartbreaking moment where he wonders why nobody had come sooner to retrieve him, which the poor guy, like, he's, I think that he just keeps thinking someone must be coming for him eventually. And, oh man, it's so heartbreaking. Like, they totally just bailed on him. Like, as far as we know, they didn't, we don't know. There's no other tapes after that. Maybe they did. Maybe their funding was shut down. We don't know what happened, but it sounds like they just said he died in a lab explosion, shut down the program. And
well, I guess they also had no reason to believe that he was still alive. I mean, for all they know, he really was dead, and maybe the decision was like, it's not worth the risk to anybody else to even try. Like, you know, I don't think 1945 tech had the ability to go back after him.
No, it for sure would have been tricky.
And maybe the thought process was, maybe if there's a way to leave, there's a way to come back. So maybe they thought maybe he would come back.
Yeah.
Except then, didn't they, like, put the Stargate in storage? So, I guess
but it would still work.
Yeah, well, I guess when we...
That's how it was... Rob came through.
Yeah.
That was after Abydos, but when we see it in 1969, it is, like, upright in that storage facility.
Well, but I mean, so, like, there's an episode later on, I don't know if you've seen it or not, but there's, like, a bank heist episode, kind of, and they basically, like, I don't know, there's, like, a gate that's just, like, randomly in this garage, and they just manage to, like, open it. So, I don't know, I think that it would still work in general. I don't...
Yeah, no, I was saying if it was like, if it was
broken, so.
I was saying that if it was, if it was covered, he wouldn't be able to get through. Like, if it was buried, like, you can't come through a buried Stargate. But as far as we know.
If it was covered like a tarp, and I was like,
they can get through.
No, I was talking about, like, we don't know exactly how it was stored, except that when they went to get there in 1969, it was upright. So if he had figured out how to come back, he would have made it through.
So if the gate's like this, you can't come through it?
You can come through it. They do.
Silk went through it in 100 days.
Yeah, but true. And then he had to have like a...
Like a rope.
To
like
prevent himself from going right back into it.
Okay.
But they go through a sideways one on the... In Death Knell, too. And then they end up in the pit underneath it. When they go to rescue Sam. Yeah, when they go back through to the beta site or whatever.
They do. You're right.
There's like a pit that had been created by the wormhole underneath it. Kawoosh.
Yeah.
And so then they like, the wormhole disengages and they're just there in that depression in the land.
Yeah. So in any case, the idea that Ernest, I mean, rightly so, either he kept thinking people were to come back for him, but for whatever reason, they didn't. For lots of good possible reasons, I'd like to think it wasn't like, oh, too bad, so sad. I like to think there was an actual reason, but he somehow kept himself going, which props to good old Ernest.
Yeah. So then we get a moment between Catherine and Sam where Catherine is upset about Ernest's reaction, which I think is reasonable. And Sam is so sweet. She basically says, like, you know, I think he was probably just shocked. She really just, I think she's so supportive and sweet and gives her some nice reassurances here. And Catherine is talking about how ridiculous she feels and how silly it is for her to feel like, you know, a lovesick teenager. And
did you pull the clip?
I did pull the clip.
I don't think the heart ever grows old.
Such a big softie.
Yeah.
She is.
I love her. Yeah, that's a really good scene. I like that a lot, especially because, like, this is, like, obviously we know that, like, Daniel and Catherine have a relationship and Jack and Catherine have a relationship, and, like, it's implied that Catherine and Sam had a relationship at the Pentagon. Weird plot line for Sam's background aside. But it's nice that they have this little moment to kind of strengthen their relationship, and we get more insight into Sam.
Yes, exactly.
And then we switch over to Daniel and Ernest.
Yep.
And Daniel, for once, is keeping the big picture in mind and is asking about the symbols and, you know, because the whole point of this is that this place wasn't on the cartouche and he wants to know.
He just wants to know what this building was, what this place was.
Yes.
So before that happens, though, Daniel has, like, is going through Ernest's notes and there's, like, sheets and sheets of hash marks. And it kind of made me laugh because Daniel's like, a calendar. And I was like, that's a pretty generous term for, like, a bunch of marks that he made on paper to count the days. Which, it's not like I would have expected him to create an actual calendar. It made me laugh, even though the reality was that he had pages and pages of marks. And it's really just tragic how long he'd been counting the days.
I mean, it kind of reminded me, someone brought up solitary confinement. It reminds me of, like, people with solitary confinement who would just, like, etch the wall or whatever to keep track of how many days. Even, I mean, I guess in solitary confinement you really can't, but, I mean, you still etch what you think was a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Generally, they measure it by the being brought food.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but Daniel does, he asks about the palace, and he kind of compares it based on what Ernest describes it to him as Heliopolis. as a place of gathering and learning. And Ernest has a journal where he's been keeping notes on everything that he's discovered about this place for 50 years. And in the journal, it's revealed that he says, like, oh, I think this is a gathering place, basically. And Catherine agrees. And it's kind of, it's so that's how it's revealed. And Catherine overhears. And she walks in. And Daniel's like, see you guys later. All right, bye.
This is kind of the scene where I had, like, a slight, I guess, like, it took me aback the way that Catherine kind of acted towards Ernest. Like, not that Catherine doesn't have anything to be upset about. He went through the Stargate without talking to her. However, the man's been alone, abandoned, isolated for 50 years. And she kind of gives him, like, my note says that Catherine's kind of cold here. And she makes some sort of reference to, like, Ernest apologizing and, like, forgiveness.
He said, like, you forgave me.
This whole exchange is just baffling to me.
Right.
Oh, well, Ernest asks for forgiveness. And he says, you forgave me a long time ago. And Catherine says, I never forgave you. And it's just like, man, like, what? All right. What a weird exchange.
Well, because for her, it's a fresh wound. Like,
for a him, fresh wound? It happened, like, 50 years ago.
No, yeah, but
she thought he was dead. And so, I mean, then she finds out he's alive and he's on this other planet because he chose to go to the other planet without having a discussion with her. I would be pissed off if my fiance, husband, or whatever decided to go, hey, I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to go disappear on this planet for 50 years and then magically show back up. Well, he didn't. Okay. Empathy here. I think he paid his dues by, again, alone, isolated, naked, 50 right. years.
But you also have to come at it from her perspective, you know, as I guess she also has emotions, and she hasn't been able to go through them yet because they're brand new. Whereas he, in his mind, has already talked to Catherine about it, or fake Catherine about it, and she's forgiven him, whereas the real Catherine hasn't.
I guess I would have just been more like, I'm just not that kind of person, I guess. I'd be like, man, that really sucks. What a shock. But holy shit, you paid your dues. And it's not like he did it, like, maliciously. It's not like he was like, don't want to get married with this old broad. Like, I'm going to go planet side. Like, they didn't know what was on the other side of the Stargate. They didn't. I mean, I don't know. I just thought it was an odd exchange, and it wasn't, in my viewpoint of Catherine, her finest hour. I get where she's coming from. I just, my personal, how I would have dealt with that situation, we are not alike.
Yeah, I think that this is just setting up what different places they are in life. Because, so first of all, how this happened from Catherine's perspective is her fiancé went to work one day and he died in a lab explosion. And it was a horrible tragedy that nobody could have controlled. And so she mourned him and was upset, but of course she wouldn't have any anger. I mean, she would maybe have a little bit of resentment towards him, but she wouldn't really have anger about that, like, he went to work and got blown up. Like, that's not his fault. But then she finds out that he chose to do this incredibly dangerous mission. And Daniel says, like, I'm sure he thought he was coming back. They had no idea. This was an incredibly dangerous thing he decided. And as far as we know, we don't see it. He didn't give her any indication at all. Like, you'd think she would be like, oh, in retrospect, he did kind of say goodbye to me super thoroughly that day. But no, he just, like, seems to pretty not really consider the consequences for her if he doesn't come back. And so from her perspective, she had a dead fiance. And then suddenly she finds out that he made that decision without her. And that is brand new. Like, she just found that out. And she's lived a whole life in the meantime. Whereas Ernest is still pretty stuck in that. Like, he hasn't really advanced past it. But, and he tells her, she's like, you left without me. You didn't tell me. And he's like, you forgave me years ago. And if it's me, if someone's like, telling me I forgave them when I didn't, I'd be like, no, I didn't. Which is her reaction in terms of, I think she would be inclined to. It didn't help that his first reaction to seeing her was running away. Like,
yeah, I guess it's just more like, I'm not denying that those are like all feelings and totally valid feelings. I guess me personally, it's just like, he's also like, again, isolated, alone, 50 years, little loose cannon up in the head, hallucinated this person for 50 years, and like, that you were this saving, surviving grace. Like, I would have been like, I didn't forgive you. Maybe it was just the delivery of the line, maybe. I don't know. But the situation, it's just like, it's not how I, like I said, ultimately, it's not how I personally would have handled the situation. So for me, the scene came off awkward to me. But obviously, like, if y'all would react the same way, it didn't ring. It rang differently for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't disagree with her, but I agree that it was super awkward. It was really awkward. Because then he's like, you're different. And it's like, no shit, Sherlock, it's been 50 years.
Yeah, she goes, I got old, and then so did you. And yeah, it was a good exchange.
But yeah, you are right that the entire exchange is hella awkward. It's awkward. So while they're having their awkward conversation, Sam and Daniel are all cozied up in the gate room reading the journal together, which... I'll just say again, I love the season one Sam and Daniel dynamic when they're like buddies.
They're fine, bros.
Yeah. And Jack calls them kids. And he's like, let's get out of here, kids. And of course, Daniel wants to stay and explore. And Jack compromises, basically. And because, again, that's part of how they sold it to Hammond, is this will be an interesting place to explore. So Jack is willing to compromise. He says, we'll leave the probe. We'll get these two old civilians home. We'll monitor the conditions of the storm that's happening and we'll come back. And Daniel's like, okay, yeah, that, I mean, everyone agrees that that's the sensible plan. Get the, get the civilians home and then figure it out. But the DHD is broken, which, yeah. And so this is the first reference we get to the fact that they usually check that there is a DHD, because Jack gets really pissed. He's like, hey, isn't it supposed to, we're supposed to check this before we come. And Sam is like, yeah, the probe verified the existence of the DHD, but it must not have been able to see that the crystal was broken on the top, that the like button in the middle. So I do like that we get that confirmation that they are always checking for a DHD before sending people through. So the thing that I thought was interesting, though, about this is we know the MALP came through and we know the MALP explored a bit. And I know in the future we find out that, like, that we see that the MALP can just send audio and visual messages. So I was a little curious why they didn't just have the, like, why they didn't open the gate before they even came through and be like, hey, Ernest, are you there? Like, just to even see if he was there. But, I mean, it's not like a nitpick or anything. I just... Maybe they did, and he was in the other room and didn't hear it, but...
Well, you also don't know that it's just, like, a building, like, a fairly small building on the other side of the gate.
Right.
Like they send them out through, they can see that there's, like, a castle-looking thing. It's, like, you could say that the same of, like, any planet. Like, any golds in there, guys?
Well, they do sometimes try to communicate with the locals that are right there.
Yep, but not this time, so...
No, they can't dial home. So Teal'c and Sam get to work trying to fix the DHD, and everyone else leaves them to work, basically. Everyone was kind of sitting around while Teal'c and Sam are working, and then they go to investigate the other room.
And we finally get reference to four alien races.
Yep, the four races. And this is their meeting place, and we see the four different languages. And we recognize one of them as, like, Norse runes, basically. So we assume that's the Asgard. But the rest of the languages are pretty... I feel like Daniel had some words to describe some of the other languages. But they weren't immediately recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
So then we go back to the DHD, and Sam has found the power source. She and Teal'c identified the power source of the DHD, and she wants to basically bypass the buttons and run the power source directly to the Stargate and then manually dial.
This is also the first time we've got Sam working with those crystals.
Yeah.
Not the last time, for certain.
Well, and the way that she's taking it apart, it's clear this is the first time she's really... taken apart a DHD and looked at how it works, because she and Teal'c are like, oh, well, everything's sort of going this way. That must be the power source. And Sam is a genius that she figures it out that quick.
She handles all the alien tech like that. She's just like, about 5 seconds and I got this. Thanks.
Yeah, so they're working on, that's the solution that they're working on. And then in the other room, the console produces like a hologram that comes out. And they compare this to must have been like an alien UN. And everyone sort of notices that the things that popped up are the elements, basically. Like it looks like a bunch of little nuclei. And Ernest says there are 146 of them. And Catherine says, oh, there's only, what does she say? There's only 111. And Ernest is like, there were only 90 when I last looked.
Yeah.
So apparently the aliens know about some elements that we don't yet. Although I think there's even more since this aired.
Because Tony Stark hasn't lived.
Yep. I mean, we've for sure got Tony Stark's element. But then
I will say this is one time when one of, like, I'm sure you're about to bring it up, but when one of the goofs is that freaking Daniel's like, oh, you can tell by the electrons what element it is. And it's just like, no, that's not how you tell what an element is. It's not the number of electrons. I mean, that helps, but that's not how. It's the protons, but it's fine.
Yeah, the number of protons determines an element. Now, granted, if you're assuming that they are all the elements and not ions, then then you should be able to count the electrons and figure out what it is. But yes, in general, elements are defined by the number of protons. Daniel is not a chemist, although as an archaeologist, he should have a decent grasp of chemistry because they work with things like carbon dating. So people
he
sometimes
carbon
talk
dates things in the show. Sorry.
Yeah. No, well, and that's what I'm saying. People kind of talk about archaeology like it's not, like he's not in the hard sciences at all, but he would have a good grasp of things like anatomy and chemistry.
Except for this episode.
Right. Right. No, that's what I'm saying is he should at least, well, we can give the excuse of when you're looking at those holograms, it's going to be a lot harder to count tightly packed protons than maybe the electrons. It seems hard to count all of them in general. Ernest has had 50 years, so he figured it out. But Daniel is super pumped, and I kind of agree with him on this in terms of him being like, oh yeah, of course they would use the elements as a way to communicate across alien races because it's one of the few universal constants in the universe is that these are the basic building blocks. And so I actually think that's really cool as a concept of like, oh, we're going to somehow turn the elements into an alphabet or a means of communicating because it's something that we all have in common. And I think that's kind of beautiful, but as far as I know, never gets referenced again. Like they never actually do that. Nobody ever communicates it that way.
This is one of those episodes where like I get so frustrated with Daniel just because I agree. Super cool. Like this is wonderful. And you should take all the data that Ernest has written down for the last 50 years with you back home. Because if you remember, Daniel, things are crumbling and the DHD isn't working and you're stranded. And I think this is enough. Whereas about 20 minutes ago, I said Daniel kept the big picture in mind. Now we're back over here to kind of narrow focus in terms of like the immediate, like he's thinking about the applications of this language in the big picture. But in the circumstances, we're forgetting. We're on a timetable and like there are more important things happening right now.
Well, even Jack comes in and is kind of like, Daniel, we need to shut this down and we need you to come help us figure out a situation to get out of here.
Yeah.
And Daniel's like, no, this is like way more important. This is like real life, big life things and stuff. Yeah. And Jack's like, but we need to MacGyver a way out of here. Like,
this
is less important than getting out.
So Daniel does piss me off when he delays them later, but right now, what is Daniel supposed to be doing? Everyone left Sam and Teal'c because none of them knew how to help.
Sorry, I'm jumping ahead. That's what I meant.
Okay.
He says, come get me when the gate is up and running. So that's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
This is the start of Daniel becoming this like hyper-focused, like, and he it's like he thinks he's going to solve the mystery of this language that Ernest couldn't solve in 50 years. And he's going to do it in the hour or 2 hours that it takes Sam to fix the DHD. So it's a little frustrating. And then, like I said, when we do get later in that episode, when the gate is up and running, it's just like, God.
Yeah. Yeah. At this moment, he's just super excited. And Jack kind of tries to interrupt him. But right then, at that moment, when he's first exploring, there's not much Daniel can be doing to help. Like, he might as well look at it for as long as he can, because he can't really help them get it up and running.
But then Sam and Tilt do think that they have a solution, and they get everyone up into the gate room.
Go ahead.
No, it's not important.
Oh, I was just going to say that, do they always travel with like that much cable and like jumper cables and stuff? Because they have
on the map. Yeah, I think it's on the map.
Right, but does the map always have like 100 feet of heavy duty cables? I was like, that's impressive. Because that's cool.
I mean, did you see how much stuff they always have on the map? I mean, there has to be like...
Right. I always thought that was like munitions and food and medical supplies and stuff, not just like giant batches of cable. Like, why?
Sometimes you need some cable, man. Yeah. I find it very believable. It's very convenient in any case. Yeah.
It just kind of made me
science thing, so it's really hot. Okay.
She has it lit up and the gate lights up for a minute and they're like, oh, let's dial it. And then it stops. And then the place starts rumbling. And I'm sure you would want to talk about the fact that Jack grabs Sam, yanks her out of the way. They go tumbling down the stairs right as thing collapses where she was, and the DHD falls through the ground.
He was just being a good CEO. It's fine.
I would also like to talk about
nothing else happens.
In addition to that, when they get up from the floor, everyone, please go back and rewatch. Please watch where one Jack O'Neill's hand is. It is caressing Sam's back, making sure she's okay as he stands up. Now, you may be saying he was just checking to make sure she was okay, using her for balance. You may be correct. I, with my shipper goggles, see something very different. Carry on.
I also liked how he grabbed her by the vest. Like, he...
It was, oh, yeah. Won't be the last time, am I right?
I also, the thing I liked about this moment too is, so then they come back up and the DHD is just gonzo and there's a hole in the ground, and it's a very like specific hole in the floor where just the DHD dropped out. And I was like, that was a very unfortunate exact piece of this building to fall apart. Oh man, it made me laugh.
Well, if something bad's going to happen, and coincidentally bad, it's definitely going to happen to SG-1.
Yeah. Yep.
At least I don't get killed like every other SG, like SG-13 or whatever, 12 or whatever number that always ends up biting the bullet.
Yeah. Yep. So then Daniel sort of reveals to Ernest that Thor is an alien. And I love that moment because he's just like talking about like, oh, this is Norse. It must be the Asgard. That's Thor's language. And Ernest is like, Thor was an alien? That's a, it's a great moment. And then, so then they're taking stock of their situation. They're gathering like, what are we going to do? And we get this classic exchange. I love Jack and Teal so much.
All right, basic survival training. We know what we have. What do we need?
We have the Stargate. We need the dial home device.
Thank you, Teal'c.
Yes, thank you, Teal'c.
It's a very good synopsis and assessment of the situation.
I mean, he told him, Jack asked a question, and Teal'c answered it. Now, he answered it literally. This is not what Jack wanted. But Teal'c doesn't know that.
Oh, I think Teal'c was... I don't know. It's hard to tell. Teal'c is so hard to read.
Yes.
But basically, they come to the conclusion that they need energy. And luckily, there's like super duper crazy thunderstorm happening. So.
Mm-hmm.
Or what I like to call the Back to the Future method.
Yes. Yeah, I kind of wish that Jack had made that reference instead of Benjamin Franklin. It seems like it would have been more Jack for him to be like, couldn't we do the like Back to the Future thing.
I agree. Marty McFly this shit. Yep. I'm going to see how many random things I can throw in this episode throughout the whole thing. So, yeah, keep going.
Yeah.
I'm working it. Doing good.
But before they do the lightning thing, they...
Right.
Because my notes are the other way around. So before...
Yeah, I was skipping ahead
lightning,
of
them. They go to the little Daniel's magic language thing, and they try and use the energy source from that podium thing.
Uh-huh.
And this is where I get... also pissed off, because Daniel basically, again, it's not that I don't understand Daniel's point of view, like I understand why it's important and that like it's frustrating that you're a scientist, this is all data, I get it, but what at my note is basically like, what good is all of this knowledge about the world and life if you're dead? So Ernest wrote it all down, and it's in all as much as he could into these notes. Take what you can get and go home, because that's more important than you all dying in this and being stuck for stuck's sake.
Yeah. I mean, so in Daniel's defense, in this moment, he like puts up a fight. He's like, oh no, don't destroy it. But then he moves out of the way and lets them try to take the power source. Like, he doesn't stop them.
It's not that, yes, Daniel does eventually come around and let it happen, but it's that argument of like, it's like, I wrote it down, like, he's being petulant. Like, there is a time and a place, and this is essentially, it's not life-threatening, but we're on a timetable here. Like, there are parts of the Stargate crumbling off. We already lost the DHD. We don't want to lose anything else, and we don't have time to sit here and argue. So if your team is telling you this is what we need to do, sometimes you just have to, like, swallow it and, like, step aside rather than like waste time by fighting about it.
It was like, well, but, 10 seconds.
Time crunch, because I mean, the floor is crumbling. The Stargate will eventually fall through the floor if they don't get out of there. And Daniel's sitting there like, well, I have to pick up this meaning of life stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. Like you said, it's important, but is it more important than your life?
Or the lives of your teams? Or
it is to him.
And I understand that Chelsea will come back and say, yes, but he stepped aside and he let it happen. And all I'm saying is it could have happened quicker.
Yeah. So what I don't understand about the scene is why the conclusion is that they shoot the staff weapon at it and nothing happens. I don't understand why Sam didn't bust out tools and like try to actually crack the thing open. Like, why did they think shooting the staff weapon at it would like open it up and give them the power source and that thing?
Maybe the crystal in there has some sort of power source they're trying to get inside of the ball, kind of a thing, and they're trying to get whatever was inside of it, or they're trying to break it so they can get inside of it.
But the assumption is just that if the staff weapon won't break it, then like nothing
right. But
else
Sam
will.
Didn't even walk over and look at the thing to be like, is there any way to take it apart? Like, I just thought it was
that's fair.
I just thought it was kind of weird that they're like, well, we need to get the power source out, let's shoot it with a staff weapon. Like, what if the power source is right there and he blew up the power source when he shot it with the staff weapon? It was just seemed a weird way to be like, we need the power source out of this thing, let's shoot it with an energy weapon and then find the power source.
According to Jess, the director forgot what was happening, so that's probably what happened.
Anyways, long story short, they for whatever reason they don't go and look at it. And Jack is just like, you know, hey, wasn't there something about old Benjamin Franklin, like, you know, surrounded by lightning and shit?
Mm-hmm.
And Sam basically was like, oh my God, Sarah, you're totally right. And it's kind of like that classic, it's what they end up, that dynamic is what they end up relying on for a lot of the season, where it's like Sam has this really complicated solution that ends up not working. Jack has a kind of like throwaway, like obvious solution, dumb in air quotes, line. And then Sam's like, no, that's perfect. You've done it again, sir. And then she figures out like how to actually solve the problem thanks to something that Jack has said.
I mean, it's the house epiphany moment when someone triggers something. He's like, oh,
I got the idea. Yeah.
So.
Yep. That is pretty much the dynamic that they continue to utilize. So
they use lightning.
Yeah. Well, so Sam says that the gate will absorb all energy, like basically energy we can put into it. So now they bust out even more cable to run it up to the roof. I really am impressed by the preparation of these teams. It's very impressive. So much cable that's capable of handling a lightning strike. So and poor Teal'c has to like go out in this storm on top of this stone building. It must be very precarious. So Daniel's refusing to come up. We get the exchange between Catherine and Ernest describing the torment of Tantalus. I pulled the clip. Do you guys want to listen to it? I just pulled it because the title's in it. I didn't.
That's what people listen to.
The torment of Tantalus.
What?
Tantalus was a king in Greek mythology, banished to Hades, forced to stand in water that receded when he tried to drink.
Everlasting, unending temptation.
So they're referring to Daniel there, but then they also sort of continue that conversation and sort of bring it back around to their dynamic, their relationship of, you know, the thing right in front of you that you can't have. And which I think is kind of interesting for this episode to be titled Torment of Tantalus. And I guess it is sort of true for Daniel over the course of the show. He does have a lot of Tantalus type moments, like the whole opportunity to explore the stars and for him to get all this information about other cultures, meaning of life, all this stuff is out there. And it does seem like every time there's this possibility of a breakthrough for him, it's dangled in front of him only to be ripped away as soon as he reaches for it. And it's not just this episode. It happens. That's kind of a recurring thing for Daniel over the course of this show. It seems to happen a fair amount where it's like, oh, we got this awesome little thing for you to study. You want to study it? And then they have to like blow it up or abandon it, or the Jaffa show up. Like, it always gets ripped away from him.
Yes. Sorry, I agree with that. Yes.
So they need a conductor basically to help them harness the lightning. So they realize they can use the diving helmet. So they grab that and send it to Teal'c, who gets to now like carry that unwieldy helmet. Maybe puts it on his head.
I hope not. He's a super tall dude. If he gets up there with the helmet on his head, he's gonna.
I'm not sure the difference between holding it in his arm or having it on his head is he's in danger.
I definitely feel like if I'm gonna get struck by lightning, I want it in my. I know there probably isn't a difference, but I feel like I want it in my hand and not on my head.
Yeah.
There's not that much of a difference. I mean, lightning strikes kill you because it goes through your heart and fries your heart.
They don't always kill you.
I'm saying that's why they do kill you, when they kill you.
You know lots of people who've been struck by lightning.
It's a long story.
I didn't say they always kill you. I said that's why they kill you.
No, hang on, wait. I want to hear the story.
It's not really. My sister's fiance, his uncle has been struck by lightning 3 times.
What?
I know.
That's not the thing is that there does seem to be one of those things where like there are more. I feel like there are multiple people who have been struck by lightning twice, which is insane, but it happens. Anyway, so Teal'c climbs up there with the helmet to put it on. Daniel still doesn't want to come up, and I'll play this clip of Ernest trying to convince him.
No prize is worth attaining if you can never share it. There would be no point.
Okay. So I've been arguing Daniel's point this whole time, and I do feel bad for the guy. He really is like Tantalus here. But this is the only argument that actually matters. Like, Ernest's point is 100% spot on. This should be the last thing that Daniel needs to hear. Like, what does it matter? Like, if you discover the secrets of the universe, then you die here. That didn't serve any purpose at all. So, like, at this point, I'm done defending Daniel. I think that's the final argument. That's really all that matters.
And he still stays. I'm just annoyed that that's what it takes for him. Like, I'm annoyed that the reason he ends up staying is like semi-selfish. Like, as a very selfless person, I feel like the safety of your team should be a great reason to like get your tushy moving to the gate.
Right, but so in his head, he's not endangering his team because he's like, you guys go, because he gives them the bullshit plan of being like, you guys go, and then...
But you know Jack would never leave you behind.
Right, but Daniel's not making sense to himself or to anyone else right now. He's so laser focused. But so in his head, he's saying, you guys go, I'll stay here, figure out as much as I can, and then if I can come back, I'll come back. If you guys can come back, you come back. That's great. But this way, if I'm on this end and the Stargate gets falls down or gets buried or whatever, I can put it back up and come back and give you the information. It's a terrible plan. It's nonsense. If the Stargate falls, it's going to fall into the sea. He's not going to be able to pull it up by himself. Also, he will probably be dead. Like, it's nonsense. He's not making sense, but in his head, he's convinced himself that he's willing to sacrifice himself for this. He's not considering that, of course, the team isn't going to leave him behind. Like, if he were being rational, he would see that, but he's not being rational.
But that's a problem.
Yeah, no, I said I was done. I'm not defending him. I'm just saying that's where his mind is. He's being an idiot.
I know. I'm just saying that my point just is like that it's frustrating that the reason he ends up leaving is a selfish reason.
That's not even he doesn't leave when Ernest tells him that.
Yeah, Jack has to go get him.
Jack basically drags him out.
He gets the gate up and Jack goes down there and he's like, Daniel, it's time to go. And Daniel's like, no, bro, I'm going to stay here and you guys can leave.
Yeah.
And again, you know Jack's not going to leave, stupid ass. Like, come on, man.
I mean, he did leave him on Abydos.
It's different. It's different
I'm kidding. That was totally different.
It's a different Jack, okay?
Well, it's a different Jack, and Abydos wasn't collapsing in rubble.
Exactly.
Yeah, so basically, Jack has to drag him back to the Stargate, functionally. And Ernest and Catherine and Teal'c go through the Stargate first. So Teal'c gets it open. They get the lightning. It's running. And Sam is waiting there right by the gate. Jack and Daniel come running to the room and Jack tells her to go through. So Sam goes through the Stargate and then the building is like collapsing around them. They barely dodge something falling from the top of them. They scramble to their feet. It's all very dramatic.
Now hang on. Whoa. You forgot the part where Sam looks longingly at the gate waiting for them both to come through the Stargate.
Oh yeah. That's next.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We haven't gotten there yet, my bad.
Well, no, that's the next thing that happens.
So Sam immediately gets up and she's looking at the Stargate. She's kind of like, come on, guys.
Yeah. She's like, they should be coming. They were right behind me.
Yeah.
And the wormhole is like flickering in and out.
Well, yeah, because Daniel waited so long to leave the room or whatever, they got hit by rubble that was falling. And so now they're like... Daniel, sometimes I just want to punch him in the face.
Yeah, no, and again, like I said, I was done defending Daniel once they were like had a functional solution for the Stargate, and him delaying almost killed him and Jack. Like, almost he and Jack legitimately were milliseconds away from dying.
But of course, they miraculously make it to the Stargate and they land on the other side.
Yep, and then Daniel has the gall to be like, "Well, that was a close one." And Jack's like, yeah, no shit, dude. Yep. That exchange made me laugh. It was like, it seemed like Daniel was trying to be a little bit self-aware of like, barely scraped through on that one. And it was like, Daniel,
and Jack's we lost like, yeah.
Jess.
And then, should I make it to the Stargate? Well, and then,
I was just wondering, Jess, if Jess wanted to say anything about Jack and Daniel.
Sam's longing.
Yeah, because you were distracted through all of that.
Oh, sorry. Pig was eating a cord.
Yeah, sorry. I brought it up.
Yes, no, yeah. Sam's longing look and the come on, guys. And, yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. The first of many future episodes, the first of many of Sam's future waiting for Jack to hopefully come through the Stargate alive and well.
I mean, I really enjoy the fact that she waited for them to come out of the room before she left, because Jack was like, okay, leave.
And she was like, mm-mm. Just like, fuck Daniel mostly. I just really hate this episode. I hate Daniel in this episode.
Hang on, we haven't finished it yet.
He almost fucking kills Jack. It's fine.
Yeah, that's what I said. It was literally milliseconds between life and death for these two. Like I said,
yeah.
I'm not defending Daniel at the end of the episode because, I offered his perspective because I think it's important to understand his headspace, but he 100% was being irrational and almost killed him and Jack, and it super sucks. So they barely make it through, and then we see them in the gate room. They try to dial back and they can't get a lock on the address. So
then he sulks.
I think he handles it reasonably well. He's like, he's a little grumpy about it. He's just standing there. He does not like he whines or anything. He just kind of like makes a sad face.
He's looking like this, and he goes,
yeah, he's sad.
He huffed. He huffed.
I don't understand why that's such a bad thing. Like, yeah, he's sad.
He was sulking.
Should he not be sulking? It was a, like, that was a lot of great things for him to.
But they have what Ernest wrote down, and they created a 3D model of what they found in that
Sam
room.
Said she was working on building a computer model that we never hear
I'm
of.
Sure, I'm sure that Sam
will
did.
Have it up in like 10 minutes. You can look at alien crystals and get it working.
Well, but they didn't have, they even Ernest hadn't copied down everything, especially because it was so impossible to write down in a notebook a 3D hologram.
No, they explain how he did it.
Right, yeah, but he didn't.
And Ernest says that Ernest created his own module, like he had his own notes about how he captured the 3D element and placement of it.
Yeah, but it was still pretty clear that he hadn't written down all of the information because it was such a long and painstaking process to note every single object's location in a three-dimensional space.
What else was he doing for 50 years?
He said he didn't have it all.
I took it as he got all the elements down, but he didn't get to the languages because he didn't understand. Yeah.
Yeah, like there was stuff that Ernest hadn't gotten down in his notes.
But it's also because he couldn't read the language. I'm pretty sure he got all of the elements down.
Right, but there were more pages and stuff. Like you could change the pages and what it said. I think it was obvious that Ernest hadn't gotten everything down and Daniel wanted to be able to explore it more. Like I said, I already conceded that Daniel was 100% in the wrong to delay them in their leaving, but he gets to be upset about not getting to go back.
I just said he was sulking. That's all.
Right. Like, that's such a bad thing. Like, they don't all sulk when they lose something they wanted. Like, that's just a human response. Oh, then there was this moment, though, that pissed me off about Daniel, is that, so Ernest says something about how you guys can ask the aliens about what they wrote when you meet them, and then Daniel thanks Ernest, and is basically like, yeah, you saved my life, or you're the only reason I'm here, and I was like, what are you talking about? Jack's the one who dragged you out of there, and almost died saving your life. So that did bother me because I was like, what the hell, Daniel? Did you at least thank Jack for like pulling you through the Stargate?
Probably not.
And so then so Daniel hugs Ernest and then Jack says, Catherine, hug me. I wondered if that was an RDA. him feeling awkward because they're just like standing there watching them hug. Because it's kind of
weird. I don't know, but Catherine got a jack hug. Catherine got a jack hug, and I would like a jack hug.
Yeah. Hashtag here for the hugs.
Here for the hugs?
And then Catherine and Ernest hug, and Jack and Daniel look on. It's kind of awkward moment that the episode ends on.
It really was kind of awkward. It was actually almost as awkward. I felt it was almost kind of as awkward as the brief candle ending with the
freeze frame.
Old man Jack. Yeah, freeze frame. So...
landings are, one of my coworkers used this metaphor for, Philip K. Dick's books and saying how, like, good takeoff, solid flight, great in-flight entertainment, super bumpy landing, didn't really know how to, like, land the plane, basically. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of these early, like, SG-1 episodes are like that, where it's like, and that's our story, bye!
Yeah. No, it's fine. It doesn't really bother me. It is what it is. So the thing about this episode is that they bring up a lot of kind seemingly important information. We get Stargate backstory. We do come back to the four races, but we get things like Sam saying she's building a computer model for Daniel based on this information that Ernest spent 50 years collecting, and they never come back to that. I feel like they could have at least given a throwaway at some point of like, oh yeah, we managed to use Ernest's information to do such and such or to find such and such a thing or to decipher something because, man, it would have been nice for this dude after 50 years of his life wasted on this planet to have something come of it. Maybe it did. Sam built that 3D model and it gave them something important they just never told us.
That's probably what happened. Just like the emotional thought that we never get. It's part of that.
Ratings.
I got like a 4. I'm going to give it a 4. I like the backstory in it. I like how we get to see Catherine again. Whether or not I like her or not, I'm not quite sure yet. I hate Daniel in this episode. That's all I got.
Yeah, I give it like a 3 out of 7. It's not one that I think this is one of the second or third time that I've rewatched this episode. It's not my favorite. Daniel really pisses me off in this episode. It's very frustrating. And then there's like no callback to any of the big life-changing shit that gets brought up in the first place. So not the best for me.
Yeah, I'm going to give it 3 as well for pretty much the same reasons you guys said. And what we said at the beginning, I don't feel like that much happens. I mean, the reason I give it a 3 is instead of less is because I do like the backstory and getting Catherine. But otherwise, I can... And the introduction of the 4 races. Like, those are kind of the 3 things I like out of this episode. The rest of it, I can take or leave. I always love Sam doing science, but it was just... Yeah, it's a pretty meh episode for me. I don't enjoy watching it that much. In fact... The first time I watched this series through, it took me like 3 nights to watch this episode because I kept falling asleep during it. So yeah, nice. Just not my favorite episode. Air Medal Award. I think it Sam. Has to be Sam. Yeah. I mean, she got the Stargate back open for them with like, I mean, as far as we know, she hadn't had any prior experience with having to deal with a broken DHD and she doesn't even panic. She just figures it out.
She handled her shit.
She did. She certainly did. So yes, I think it has to be Sam in this one.
So we did another episode, guys.
Yes.
Yep.
Our next episode that we're recording is Bloodlines.
That's correct.
If you hate this episode and you want to Daniel rage with us, or if you love this episode and you love Daniel and you don't know what the hell we're talking about, you can email us at chevronslock7@gmail.com or tweet us at chevronslock7, or you can personally harass me on Twitter at Prof Tennant or Tumblr Professor Tennant.
You can find me, Melanie, at on Twitter at Melanie Martian, MARSHAN, or you can find me on Tumblr at My Stupid Dumb Flyboy.
You can find me, Chelsea, on Twitter at Cahils or on Tumblr at Pianosa 2 to the Fighting 8th. We need to end this episode because we are tired.
You look different.
I'm old, Ernest. So are you.
I thought we had taken the lead back, but we didn't. We tied it up, and then we had it, and then fucking Golden State scored.